What are you trying that for? What's that do?
A little bit of extra cushion on the bottom. I don't have an ass.
Okay, cool.
I got one of them frog booties.
You do have a frog butt.
That was my Theo Von moment. I'm nowhere near as funny as he is, but...
He's just so chaotic.
I have my moments.
He's so chaotic. You do have your moments. Every now and then you chime in with a good one. Here we go. Part two. Take two.
Take two. Take three.
For a part two?
Yeah. Remember we tried to start with the other
day. Yeah, but my notes. So we tried recording this once. We didn't even start recording. Because I had done my notes in like different segments. And then when I went to go read my notes, they were all out of whack. And I was like, I got to figure this out. So we said, all right, we'll do it later. Not a big deal. We recorded last night, sat down on the couch, turned on a movie. I went to edit, and the audio was trash.
It was so bad.
So I looked when we started. For some reason, it was defaulting, I think, to the video microphone instead of our regular microphones, and that's why it was so bad.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So I made sure it wasn't doing that this time.
Yeah.
So we talked about this already. Be surprised. We have a listener, because I want to know who this person is. Mm-hmm. In Ashburn, Virginia, they listen every week. A lot of times, they're one of the first listeners every week, and I have no clue who it is, and I want to know who you are. So email us at theguiltyandtheghostlypodcast@gmail.com. Or Facebook message us. Get a hold of us. I want to send you a shirt and maybe some other goodies.
Mm-hmm.
So reach out. Let us know who you are. We appreciate the listens. Another cool thing is we are routinely getting listeners in the UK, Canada, Germany, Australia, and Iceland.
Yeah, that's awesome, guys.
That is so freaking cool.
Yeah, we never thought that we would reach anybody
outside our social group?
Yeah, seriously.
And now we're reaching people in complete different countries, and that is so freaking awesome.
It's awesome. Thank you guys very much.
We really appreciate it. We feel like little fangirls, like, oh my gosh, look at this. So that's pretty cool. Well, we've got a long episode today, and we are actually recording another episode with Corky right after this, so I think we're going to go ahead and jump in.
Yep.
Sending it over to you, Josh Phillips.
What in the hell was that?
I'm a news anchor.
I didn't like that.
Okay, well, I'll take that out. Let's go. What do you got, freaking asshole?
You should save all of that.
I'm not saving you.
You saved me a long time ago. So, last week we talked about the Kit Kat heist.
Yes.
And I did a little more digging and got more information on it. And they're looking for the people still.
Okay.
But I do have a little more information on what exactly happened.
I can tell you. It's affecting me right now.
Is it?
It is. It is. Because Jackson and I went to a convenience store. He's like, hey, Mom, can we go get a little sweet treat on the way home? Yes. I never say no. Walk into the gas station. Check the aisle. Oh, there's Kit Kats. But we already established this. That's not where my heart lies. My heart lies with the big cats.
Yeah, you love those.
Searched up and down, all over that freaking aisle. Not a single damn big cat on that candy aisle. After I'd been thinking about it all week because of your story.
Mm-hmm.
Not a single big cat.
Yeah. Well, these Kit Kats aren't the same.
Okay.
These Kit Kats are special, limited edition, Formula One Kit Kats.
Okay. So I guess the packaging's different, basically. That's the only difference?
Probably.
Okay.
So the thieves stole 12 tons, which is 413,793 Kit Kat bars.
That's why I couldn't find mine. That explains it.
I don't think so. I don't think so. But I don't remember what I was going to say.
You're going to tell me how many Kit Kat bars they stole.
Oh, I told you that. There were 413,793.
Well, I can't tell you what you were going to tell me. I can just tell you what you just told me.
Yeah, but there was something that I was going to say about it, but I can't remember.
They were limited edition.
Yeah, they were limited edition. So, yeah, that's what it was. So I think that my idea of why this happened is so they can drive the price of the limited edition candy bars up.
It's an inside job.
Maybe.
Who else benefits from it?
Who knows?
Maybe they just really like Kit Kats.
Well, if you stole nearly 500,000 Kit Kats...
That is insane. That is insane.
I mean, you basically control the market.
It's almost like when all those computer guys were like, hey, let's mess with GameStop's stock.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if maybe there was like, you know, like a special, you win a special prize or something like that. You know,
they're like looking for the golden ticket.
Yeah, like the golden ticket type shit. I don't know if maybe that's what it was and the people stole it because, you know, they're looking for it. So it kind of, like, this kind of reminds me of, like, a Fast and the Furious.
And the Furriest? Yeah, Fast and the Furriest?
No, they're all bald and covered in baby oil. They're definitely not furry.
No shit.
But no, it'd be hilarious if that was, like, a...
Like a promo?
Yeah, like a promo for the next movie.
You see Vin Diesel driving down the road eating the Kit Kat? Oh, that's funny. It makes sense. It checks out.
I mean, it could be. Who knows?
Yeah.
See, but then again, it could just be somebody trying to find that golden damn ticket.
They want to go to Willy Wonka.
Maybe so.
Who knows? You got any more? Is that it?
Yeah, there was another one, too. So, in China, there's this Chinese car manufacturer that's trying to, or has patented... a toilet for your car. So basically, the passenger seat retracts back and there's a toilet.
That just doesn't seem like it would work well.
I couldn't imagine that at all. Could you imagine driving down the highway and your passenger's taking a dump? And you just have to sit there and
smell it. You have to slam on the brakes.
Oh, my God. That would be so bad.
Why?
Like, why would anybody think that that's a necessary item?
Just pull over. Just pull over.
Yeah.
That is insane.
That is the silliest thing anybody could ever patent for a car.
You've got to set up. So if this comes to fruition, you've got to come up with family rules. Because, you know, there's like family rules in RV campers and stuff. Like, you can't take a number two in there because nobody wants to smell it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you come up with those same rules in the car?
Bro, I have no idea. And like, who has to dump the turd tank? Whose responsibility is that?
It's one of those gas attendant gas stations.
Nobody's going to be a full service attendant for that shit. That's not happening. I promise you.
Wouldn't be me.
You're definitely not going to find any new generation kids to work at that fucking place.
I wouldn't.
That's I wouldn't either. That's a terrible job. I mean, I'd have to do it for our own family probably.
Probably.
Well, it was a Chinese car.
Watch it.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's too much. That's just laziness to me. Like, I understand traffic. You get stuck. It's inconvenient. But how often does it happen to where you've got to go now that you need a toilet in your car?
Bro, there's been times. Just like your son, every time we go to a gas station.
No. This is what he does. We take him to a gas station. He gets a drink.
Yep.
He chugs that entire drink in about 5.2 seconds.
Yep.
We'll get about 15 miles down the road. And now he's got to pee.
Bad.
Right now. Right freaking now. Irritates the hell out of me.
Yep.
Irritates me. And they'll say, don't chug it down because we're not stopping. I won't. And I look back there. He's got a freaking Gatorade mustache. His bottle's empty. I'm like, pee in your bottle, bro. Just pee in your bottle. You've got an empty bottle right there.
And he refuses to do that. I remember when I was a kid, I had no choice. That was the only place.
Kids are spoiled nowadays.
I know. It's ridiculous.
Well, I guess we'll go ahead and jump in. Like I said.
Well, you didn't let me finish.
Oh. Please continue.
So it kind of reminds me of Idiocracy.
Oh my god.
You remember that movie?
Yes.
So there's the part on Idiocracy where I can't remember. Joe slides into it from his little cryogenic coffin looking thing into what's his name's apartment. I can't remember his name, but his lawyer. He slides into his house in there, comes out, and the dude's like sitting on his chair watching some kind of weird ass show where they're kicking people in the balls or cutting food with their feet. It's like really crazy.
It's almost like watching TikTok.
It's really strange. But it's like the stupidest movie you've ever seen, but it's
so funny. It's got some good actors in it.
It really does. But going back to that scene where he slides in and dude's sitting on the chair. Soon as he slides in, dude stands up from the chair and flushes the toilet. Like his recliner in his living room is also a toilet. So it's almost like we're slowly turning into
morphing
that.
Into that. Because, I mean, you've got the weird freaking videos like TikTok where people do stuff like that all the freaking time.
Yep.
Now you got cars with toilets in them.
Yep.
Our political climate right now is not great. It's pretty similar.
Yep. Yep, it really is. And it has some great actors in it. It's Dax Shepard.
Dax Shepard. Yeah, he's... I love Dax Shepard.
I do too.
It's got Maya Rudolph.
Yeah.
It's got not Owen Wilson. What's his name?
Both of his brothers.
Luke Wilson, and I don't remember the other guy.
Matthew?
I don't remember.
I can't remember either.
But it is so funny. It's definitely one of those you have nothing else to do, so you just watch.
Yeah, it's even got Justin Long in it.
Yeah,
like it's got a lot of big name actors in it.
Yeah.
And then President Camacho, what's that dude's name?
Terry
Crews. Terry Crews is in it too.
Yeah.
And he's like the president.
He's so funny.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Go watch it.
Haven't seen it? Watch it. It's definitely worth it.
It's our recommendation.
But trust me, it's dumb.
It is so stupid. You will feel stupid after watching it, but it is funny.
Yeah.
Makes you laugh.
All right. Now you can start your show.
I'm allowed to now.
You're allowed to start your show now. Okay. Yes.
Well, you listened to it yesterday just to kind of recap a little bit. But for those that haven't, if you haven't listened to part one, go to part one.
Now's the time to go check it out.
It really sets up who he was before he became this psycho killer. Kind of talks about his early childhood, the stuff that he went through, and kind of maybe what kind of created this monster, led to it. And then for the ones that have already listened to it, I've got a little summary.
Yeah. But she left you guys on the first episode with the biggest cliffhanger ever.
It wasn't really a cliffhanger.
Whatever.
It was just like a shocking revelation.
If you haven't heard it, you at least have to go and listen to that part because it is insane.
Josh had no idea what was coming.
No, I
didn't. No clue. Because I'm the true crime buff. He might watch it if I'm watching it. And he watches like cops and stuff, like real body cam footage. But as far as going back and studying, or that may not be the right term. I sound like a psycho, but.
Well, you kind of are.
Watching, listening to true crime, that's not his jam. And so being able to share this information and seeing his reaction has been interesting.
Yep.
I am ready to be done with it, though.
Yeah, this is it's a terrible story.
It is.
It's probably the worst case that we've covered
so far.
I mean, as far as like body count and how depraved. How calculated this guy was.
Yeah.
And yeah, depraved. Like, and just the, I don't know, this guy's something else.
Freaking psycho.
Out of all the serial killers that I've really looked into, I've never really looked into the big name ones.
Yeah.
That much.
Yeah.
And this one is shocking.
Yeah. And then you hear about all of his little groupies, and it's like, what?
Yeah.
What? All I can picture when I see Ted Bundy is the seals off of, I think it's Finding Nemo, with their little eyebrows, their unibrows that they've got. That's all I can picture. It's been all over Facebook.
Don't remember that.
I'll send it to you. It is so funny.
I don't remember the last time I watched Finding Nemo.
It may have been the second one. Is there a second one?
I don't remember.
TBD.
Long time since we watched that.
And we used to watch it all the time because that was
Seth's. That's back when Seth was little.
Movie. That's all he wanted to watch was Finding Nemo and Madagascar.
Madagascar. I loved that damn
movie. He couldn't say Madagascar, so Seth would be like, I want to watch Madagascar. So funny.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before the murders began, Ted Bundy wasn't just some shadowy monster. He was a product of a deeply complicated, disturbing upbringing. Born in 1946 to an unwed mother, he was raised believing that his grandparents were his parents and his mother was his sister. A lie that unraveled in his early teens and left lasting damage. Inside the home, things were far from normal. His grandfather was reportedly violent and abusive. His grandmother struggled with severe mental illness, and Bundy himself showed early warning signs, like a fascination with fear, violence, and control. As he grew older, he became increasingly isolated, bullied, and obsessed with pornography and manipulation. By the time he reached college, Bundy had mastered the art of blending in. He was charming, intelligent, politically active, and even worked as a crisis hotline. Even worked at a crisis hotline, saving lives while secretly developing the skills to manipulate others. But behind that clean-cut image, something darker was taking shape. After a devastating breakup and years of resentment, Bundy's behavior escalated. In 1974, young women in the Pacific Northwest began disappearing. And that is where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
Part two. You ready? With reports going out everywhere of the missing women, people began walking in groups at night. They quit hitchhiking. And Ted
Munchie?
Why can't I? I hate him so much. My body physically will not let me say his name. I've called him.
You've called him so many different things.
I can't say the name that I've been calling him because we finally figured out it was my customer's name. It's very similar, but not. And it keeps just rolling off the tongue. So I keep saying that name. I've called him Buddy. I've called him Tim. I've called him.
Yeah. Yeah, now you called him Munchie.
Now I've called him Munchie. My body hates him so much. It's just like, no, you will not say his name.
Before you know it, you're going to be calling him Al Bundy.
Probably. Oh my gosh. Well, Bundy was instrumental in passing a law that made hitchhiking legal while he was in politics. Law enforcement was scrambling to try to find the suspect, and they had little evidence to go on. The little bit of evidence they did have, they kept hidden from reporters to avoid the case being compromised. And they really just didn't have a way to widely spread it like they do now. I mean, newspapers, but normally that's just kind of local. You don't really see it everywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Not unless it becomes like a big ordeal and then it starts to spread.
But, yeah.
You know, especially back then, because all they really had was the newspaper.
Yeah.
now we have social media and you can reach across the world.
Yeah.
And see things that are going on everywhere, just like the Kit Kat heist.
Yeah. In the UK. We would have never known.
We would have never known.
I would have never known while my big cat was missing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, all the...
It's Vin Diesel's fault.
Thanks, Vin Diesel. All the victims had been attacked at night, but in July of 1974, that would soon change. On July 14th, 1974, at Lake Sammamish in Washington State...
What'd you say?
Sammamish.
Son of a bitch?
Son of a bitch. Sammamish, I believe is how you say it. It's Sammamish.
Okay, girl.
Okay, girl.
You do you. That's one of those weird words.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder where that came from.
I don't know.
You should have looked that up.
I'm... Where's the chocolate? It's coming back.
All right, continue.
Two women would be kidnapped and killed in broad daylight. I'm mad at you. 23-year-old probation caseworker named Janice Ott and 19-year-old college student Denise Marie Naslund, majoring in computer programming, were the two that would go missing. There were an estimated 40,000 people at the lake that day. So this was a very popular spot in that area.
That's a lot of people on the lake.
And that day, they also happened to have several companies that were having like a family picnic day there. So, I mean, it was packed.
So one missing person would go missed quite easily in a crowd like that.
Two.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you would think it would almost be harder to notice somebody missing, but yeah, you make a good point. Yeah. There's 40,000 people. It may make it easier.
It'd make it a hell of a lot easier because there's so much going on, you're not going to notice that.
And you blend in with everybody. It's exactly. Not like they remember the one creepy guy. There's probably a lot of creepy guys
there. There's probably a lot of creepy people there.
If I was there, they would approach me.
Probably. You're a creepy people magnet.
I know. Well, Janice was married, and her husband was in California studying how to create prosthetic limbs. Pretty cool. While he was out of town, they would talk on the phone every night, and they would write letters back and forth. And in one of the letters, she was kind of joking around, like, it takes so long for the mail to get back and forth. Like, I could send this, and one of us could be dead by the time you get it. Like, it's crazy how long it takes. And then he was doing an interview later on, and he said that in his last letter that he sent her, he said something along the lines like, be careful, love you. And he said, I never told her to be careful. Like, that wasn't something that I said. He said, but something told me that day when I was writing to put that in the letter, and then she would never get it.
How long did a letter take to get somewhere back then?
I don't know. A while, I guess.
Anymore, you can pretty much send anything about a couple of days.
You obviously do not use our mail system here recently. I have customers that will send me a check. It'll take 2 to 3 weeks to get to me.
The fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. Not all the time. Sometimes they'll come within a few days. But here lately, I'll have several. And I know they sent it because they'll be calling me worried about it. Did you get it? Did you get it? And it'll take like 2 weeks to get to me.
That's weird.
Yeah. Just from like Louisiana, which we're only like an hour and a half from Louisiana.
That's really weird. I wonder if maybe there's like a checkpoint somewhere where they do like a customs check every now and then.
On a letter?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm just spitballing stuff.
Oh my.
I have no idea how the mail system works. I've never really worked in any kind of industry close to it.
Yeah. I don't know.
But normally, whenever you order something like off of Amazon, you get that shit in a couple days.
Sometimes the next day.
Sometimes the next day.
I don't know.
But I guess that's Amazon delivery.
Mm-hmm. They have warehouses everywhere now.
Yeah.
Which I got a bone to pick with our Amazon delivery guy. I'll tell you about it later.
I mean, you're almost talking like a couple of weeks to send a check from Louisiana. Did that motherfucker ride a horse over here?
I don't know. It just takes forever. That's all I know. Well, witnesses would come forward and say that they did see a man introducing himself to multiple people as Ted, and he would ask for help moving his sailboat. So he approached many people that day. Mm-hmm. He was basically just keep on, keep on, keep on until he could finally be successful.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, again, terrifying to be that person knowing that he approached you and you're like, nah, I'm good. And then find out what he did later. It's like, oh my gosh. They also said that the man spoke with a slight accent. One witness, Mary, was approached by Ted, and he had his arm in a cast, asking for help moving his sailboat. She agreed and followed him to his car. When they got to the car, there was no sailboat. And Ted was like, oh, that's because it's actually right down the road at my parents' house. So just get in the bug, and I'll just drive you on over there, and you can help me. And she, like, glanced over, and there was no passenger seat in the bug. And she was like, no, I'm good. And, like, dipped out real freaking quick. Like, how did he, again, hindsight's 2020, but how?
First of all, why? Why is the seat missing?
Yeah. If he was a little bit smarter, he would leave the freaking seat in there and until he grabbed him, but with the way that I did see where people were talking about this, the way the bug is set up, if he did incapacitate them, they're sitting in the seat, they're flopping all over the place while he's driving, that's going to bring eyes on him and be more suspicious. So if he takes it out, he can lay their body down and not be seen.
I understand that. I totally get that.
But it would be a red flag that you want me to get in your car and you don't even have a seat in there?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like,
you want me to sit on the floorboard on your little freaking porta potty now?
Right. Yeah. He was turning it into one of those new Chinese cars.
Yeah, it's exactly what he was doing. Like, that just doesn't, it's wild.
Yeah, that's just strange. Like, why would anybody try to pick somebody up? Hey, come, I'll give you a ride in my car, but hey, there's no seat. Somebody please tell me if that has ever happened to you. I'm very curious.
If you went to go get in the car and there's no seat?
Yeah. Like, unless it was like your redneck buddy that had an old truck with two literal bucket seats, because that's all the seat he had on a deer lease. If you got in somebody's car and they had no seat and you had to sit on the floor pan, please let us know.
It's just wild.
I couldn't imagine doing that.
No. Well, shortly after that, two witnesses seen Janice talking to a guy who introduced himself as Ted. And again, using his actual name. Using his real name, introducing himself to these people.
Yeah, this guy's something else. Like, he's got, I feel like he's almost got a God complex. Like, he doesn't think he can get caught.
We talked about that, too, you know, last week with him and the mice and literally playing God with the mice. And then we talked about, you know, he's killing these people and taking their lives, but then working at a crisis center and doing a really good job saving these people's lives. Mm-hmm. And you brought up a good point. It was the control for him.
That's exactly what it was.
He chooses who lives and who dies.
Yep.
That is sickening.
This is a very sick individual.
Well, just 4 hours later, Denise had gone to... No, we're still talking about Janice. Two witnesses seen Janice talking to a guy who introduced himself as Ted. He gave her the same sailboat story, and then the two were seen walking away together. Just 4 hours later, Denise had gone to the bathroom, she was seen talking to a man, and then she was never seen again. So just literally 4 hours later.
Yeah, and we talked about, I can't remember exactly what we said, but it was about him having almost like a need to replace that fear.
He's escalating.
Yeah.
So what he had been doing, which I think I talk about it here in a minute, why he did it, but it's just escalating to add more, yeah. more of a thrill, more of a rush, just to see what he could get by with, see if yeah. he could pull it off.
This it's just seeing him build the character of what he becomes is disgusting.
Yeah. Well, he would take Denise to where he had Janice tied up and held, still alive. So he didn't even kill Janice after he kidnapped her. He tied her up, left her there, and then went and found another girl.
Wow.
And brought her back. He would later confess that he killed one of them while making the other one watch. Which, we discussed that in The Torso Killers.
Yep.
And he did that with some friends. He kidnapped two friends, and they had to sit there and watch him kill the other person, knowing they were next. And just watch. There's nothing they could do.
Mm-hmm.
Where you would go mentally with that, I could not. That would be terrifying.
Yeah, it would.
And devastating. All in one.
Yep.
To know that you're watching somebody else's life being taken, and you're next.
Yep. That's terrifying.
That's mental torture is what that is.
Yep.
This would be two victims in one day, and in the middle of the day. With all the witnesses this time, police were finally able to create a sketch of the suspect and had the name Ted to add to it.
Mistake number one.
The sketch was a little rough, and when you look at it, it kind of looks like him, but it kind of doesn't. And that's mm-hmm. one thing that he's known for, is how to manipulate his looks by subtle changes. And he looks totally different. Or even, I seen where people were talking about, even in the, like, courtroom, he would look one way when he's being sweet, charming Ted, and then when that one second he loses his anger and just loses control just a little bit, his entire face, like, his facial features would almost change when he would flip that switch. And as soon as he realized he's losing control, it was like a mask went right back on, and here he is, Mr. Charming Ted, looking completely different.
Mm-hmm.
That is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
It was close enough, and tips began flooding in. Up to 200 per day would come in. They came in from random strangers and people close to Ted. His old psychology professor called in, and he was like, hey, I've got this quiet, kind of weird student in my class, or maybe he was a previous student in his class, and he drives a Volkswagen Bug, which they had the description of the car, like, maybe you should check him out. And Rule called and reported it. He had other co-workers call and report saying, hey, you need to check this guy out. On August 8th, 1974, Ted's longtime girlfriend Liz would find a hatchet, women's clothes, a bowl of house keys, crutches, and supplies to make a cast in Ted's room.
Wow.
She would call the Seattle Police Department, terrified of what she had found. The officer told her that she needed to come fill out a report. So, even though she found all of this stuff and said, his name's Ted, he drives a Volkswagen Bug, I found this, A, B, and C in his closet, the police department was being so overran with tips by disgruntled girlfriends saying, hey, you should check out Joe Schmo over here, just because they were pissed off at their boyfriends. And they were being so overran that they basically thought Liz was doing the same thing and just blew her off.
Wow.
And then she would...
That's crazy. Like, right?
Tell me. Tell me what's crazy besides me.
You're kind of crazy. No, like, 200 calls a day... And then there's legitimate calls mixed in between that. And most of those calls are just people being stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that to me is wild.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Like, they probably could have caught that guy way earlier had that not happened.
Yeah, 100%. And that happens in a lot of cases where their tips come in and they're just BS tips. And I mean, yeah, they follow up on them, but they lead to nowhere and come to find out it's just somebody mad at somebody trying mm-hmm. to get them in trouble.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I think in some cases they actually prosecute those people, don't they?
They're starting to. I mean, it's kind of been a law or whatever that they could, but they never really,
pursued
followed it. Through with it. But if it's bad enough or if they waste enough time on it, they're starting to be a little bit more strict about it. And
well, they should. Charges.
Yeah.
100%. False reporting is probably the worst thing that you could do for those people, because there's times where somebody could have gotten their life saved.
Yeah. Or even if you ruined the life of a man or woman or whatever by calling and reporting fake accounts,
mm-hmm.
then when somebody does have something like that to happen to them, they're not believed because you've got all these other ones that are doing stupid crap like that because they're mad at somebody. Mm-hmm. Like, it snowballs, basically. Yeah. Well, Liz would report Ted to the authorities 3 different times within a month, but...
What?
She continued to date him.
No fucking way.
So... I am not victim blaming. I want to put that out there right now. I have been in abusive situations. I have very close loved ones that have been in abusive relationships. And it's hard. Like the average amount of times it takes an abused person to relate. Leave a relationship. Let me start. Oh my God. Back up. Rewind. The average number it takes for a person to leave an abusive relationship, I think it's either 7 or 9 times.
Wow.
Because they manipulate them so much mentally, convinces them they're worthless, convinces them they're a piece of shit, convinces them there's nothing else out there for them. And then they love bomb them. I'm sorry for what I said. I did not mean that. I love you so much. Here's all these gifts. I love you. I love you. I love you. And then as soon as they get them right back where they want them, they start the abuse again. And they knock them back down over and over and over again. And it takes an average, like, I can't remember. I normally have that number right off the top of my head. It's either 7 or 9 times to leave an abusive relationship before they finally leave.
Wow.
And a lot of times, they never make it to the 7th or 9th time, whatever time it is, because they're dead. Because the abuser kills them.
Yeah.
And that is terrifying. And Ted knows where she lives. She has a daughter. He knows where she works. And keep in mind, yeah, they're together, but they're doing the long distance thing because she's in Seattle, Washington, and maybe not at... I think at this point, too, he's kind of bouncing around, going to this college and this college, Utah, Seattle. So they're not together 24/7 either. Mm-hmm. So maybe she's thinking, if I keep him happy at a distance, get more information and keep reporting it to the cops, they will lock him away and then I can freely leave. I don't know that's what she was doing, but maybe. Maybe
That's a logical explanation of why she would do that, yeah. For sure.
Maybe she was so scared she couldn't.
Yeah.
Maybe she didn't fully believe it was him, but also thought, well, if it is, I kind of need to report it because I need to save these other lives. And she's reporting it. She's doing what she needs to. It's just it's not being taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Wild.
Sad.
Well, the list has now been narrowed down to 100 suspects, and Bundy is one of them. Detectives learned that Bundy had been at Lake Sammamish 2 days before the murders. They would show his picture to 8 witnesses to confirm that he was the man seen talking to the women that day. 7 out of the 8 witnesses said that was not the same man they seen.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to him blending in and changing his appearance just by the mood he's in,
mm-hmm.
basically. Crazy.
Well, you also got to think about how many people they seen that day, too.
Yeah.
And how easily you could blend people's faces together in your mind.
Eyewitness accounts are not that great.
Yeah.
Your mind plays tricks, and
yeah.
you think you see one thing, and it's actually another. And
especially if it's not like a traumatic event.
Yeah.
If it was a traumatic event, like...
Or even a traumatic event, your brain tries to shut off, and it will manipulate things. Yeah. I mean, it's a lose-lose.
And that does happen. And then there's some people that do, like, hypnosis,
mm-hmm.
and they go under hypnosis to try and recount whatever details they can do. I don't know if I believe in that or not.
Yeah.
Because I've never experienced hypnosis.
I've watched it before.
I've watched it too.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, but we've got people that we know that do things and don't know that I believe them.
Well, add the fact that Bundy was the ideal all-American guy next door on the outside. Clean cut, no criminal record really to speak of. He didn't fit the norm of a serial killer. On September 6, 1974, Janice and Denise's bodies were found off a service road 2 miles east of the Sammamish State Park.
So is there like a specific serial killer M.O.?
They kill people.
Well, yeah, but you said like they didn't think that he fit the criteria.
Well, a lot of times when you think serial killer, you think this really creepy, nasty guy that...
Not me. I think really smart people.
Yeah, but that's what's crazy is like there's different ones. But back then you think, oh, they're a serial killer? I can pick them out of a crowd, no problem. Like your mind just falsely makes you think you can tell there's something different about it.
Maybe, but most of those people are master manipulators.
True. Yeah, 100%.
And maybe that's because we've had so much experience looking into them that I know that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, back then they didn't.
Yeah, and I guess that's a good point. So for them, just a monster was what they were looking for.
Basically.
Okay, that makes sense.
Other unidentified remains were also found near that area, and they would later be identified as George Ann by a confession from Bundy. Just 6 months later, remains were found on Taylor Mountain by forestry students who were marking trees. Those belonged to Brenda Ball, and they began searching the area and found Susan and Roberta's skulls and mandibles as well. But they were never able to locate Donna's, which is Donna's the one that he said he burnt her head in the fireplace of his longtime girlfriend. And we covered their stories in part one.
Can you burn bone in just a regular fire?
It has to get really hot to fully disintegrate it. So he could be full of shit. He could have just been lying.
Unless he was just burning the flesh from it.
I was going to say, but he could have also burned it down as much as he could and then disposed of the skull in other ways too.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
Well, in August of 1974, Bundy decided to go back to law school in Salt Lake, Utah. However, once he started, he quickly began struggling and realized very quickly he was way in over his head. He's not as smart as he thought. On September 2nd, 1974, Bundy would strike again, this time in Idaho. He picked up a hitchhiker, raped and strangled her, and Bundy would confess to this before his execution. He would say he went back to where he left the body, took pictures, and then dismembered her. And I'm sure did all the other nasty
shit that he does.
On October 2nd, 16-year-old Nancy Wilcox disappeared from Salt Lake City. She was last seen in a Volkswagen Beetle. Bundy would say that he intended on only raping her before letting go. Like, that's all he was going to do. He wanted to see if he could de-escalate. Like, he wanted to see how much control of himself that he had. But when she started screaming, he accidentally strangled her. You can't accidentally strangle anybody. I can't remember the exact minutes, but it takes
a while.
Several, like 5 to 7 minutes of constant pressure.
Mm-hmm.
To end somebody's life that way. That's not an accident.
I was just watching something earlier, and it was kind of like a cops thing, but I can't remember what it was. And these police came into this house, and they were looking for a lady on a welfare check, and it was her son that was there. Well, they ended up finding her body dismembered in the freezer.
Oh, my gosh.
And, like, as soon as they found the body, he was telling them everything. He spilled every detail, and, like, it was telling it right there on
the deal.
I was watching. Like, and they were like, well, how did you do it? And he's like, well, I just put my arm around her neck. And they're like, well, how long did you hold? He's like, I don't know, but it took a long time.
Yeah, yeah, it takes a long time.
So, like, you know, I've heard from certain people that Like, it does take a long time.
Yeah.
Like, a really long time.
Yeah.
So long, in fact, that your arm will...
Who are you talking to?
He's super tired. Like, so I've heard stories from people that have been overseas. We'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Okay. We're going to continue. Well, he strangled her and then buried her near a national park in Utah, and her remains were never found. And we hear that a time and time again. Remains were never found. Remains were never found. On October 18th, daughter of a police chief, 17-year-old Melissa Smith, would go missing in Salt Lake City. A police chief. Like, it's...
That, how the that fuck takes, does that happen?
That takes some... balls.
Yeah, seriously. You gotta be one psychotic son of a bitch to attempt that. Or just God stupid. Complex.
Yeah.
It's a God complex. He's at the point now where he is pushing it to the absolute limit.
Yeah, 100%. Well, after 9 days of searching for her body, she was finally found in the mountains. She had been beaten, raped, sodomized, and strangled. After the autopsy, it was determined that she was held captive for up to 7 days after her abduction.
Wow. So, since this is our second time, we've already discussed this. This is not the first time that he's kept one alive for a certain period of time. And like we talked, it's almost as if once the victim gets to a point where it no longer
suits his needs
or necessarily, like, there's no fear anymore. They've given in.
Yeah.
It's just what they have to do to survive at that point. He no longer has that control.
Mm-hmm.
So then he has to start looking for another victim.
Mm-hmm.
And grows bored of the last.
Mm-hmm.
Which to me is the most disgusting thing I could even fathom.
Yeah.
This guy has something else.
Yeah. Well, on Halloween, 17-year-old Laura Ann Aime, I think it's Aime, or is it Amy? A-I-M-E.
E-E?
No, just one E. A-I-M-E.
Sure, Aime.
I think it's Aime. But then I'm like, oh, is it Amy?
I don't know. If we're wrong,
I will let you know next week.
No, you won't.
Well, she was taken after leaving a cafe. She was beaten, raped, and strangled with a nylon stocking. Her parents would refer to her as a gentle free spirit. She would be found on Thanksgiving Day.
Wow, how sad.
Again, let it be noted that Bundy would confess to returning to the bodies, taking pictures of them, doing their hair, raping them until the bodies were so decomposed that it would no longer be possible. Awful.
This dude, like, first of all, most people are repelled by deceased bodies anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But to think that someone would go back days or weeks later
and do this
and do those things after the body has started decomposition
and take their dignity away again. I mean, again, this is just, again,
this is something different. This is a different person. Like, to be able to be normal on the outside in the outside world and do things totally normal, but in the privacy of your own depraved mind,
doing this.
Do things like this. This is a different kind of person.
Different kind of animal. He's not even a person. He's not even an animal. Animals are sweet and loving.
Not
monster. He is a monster.
I mean, you think a bear is cute until it's fucking gnawing on the back of your skull.
They're still cute. They just need a snack.
I mean, at the very core of our nature, we're just an animal trying to survive too.
Yeah.
So I still think that they're people, but there's something wrong with their
obviously
mind.
Obviously, he's still a person. I'm just saying, he's just so wicked. So wicked and dark.
Right. But I feel for that I guess, the child that was...
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I mean, for me, this is... So the environment, I mean, definitely we talked about this in the first episode, you know, the environment plus his mind was probably already fucked up to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just snap and become this.
Yeah.
This has to be imprinted in your DNA somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, nurture and nature, but I think he was both. I think he was predisposed already. There was mental illness in his family. Yeah. And then you take into consideration, you know, we talked about his grandfather actually may have also been his father due through incest. That's going to add another layer on it. Mm-hmm. Then he's brought up in this household with this violent, violent man.
And if those accusations were correct, then he probably also witnessed his mother getting raped by his grandpa.
Yeah.
So those things to him became normal.
Mm-hmm.
As a child.
Yeah. Yep. Sickening.
I mean, this whole situation was just a breeding ground for this festering sore of a person.
That's a good way to put it.
I'm serious.
Well, Bundy confessed to this murder. There was not enough evidence to verify that he was the perpetrator. Until earlier this month, 51 years later, DNA evidence was finally able to confirm that Bundy was the one who abducted and killed Laura.
Could you imagine waiting that long?
No. 51 years.
To figure out how your loved one disappeared.
Which they knew how she disappeared. They knew that she was murdered. Mm-hmm. And Bundy confessed literally the night before he was executed.
I'm starting to worry about you. That's like the second or third time you call him your buddy.
I know. And he confessed the night before he was executed. So they knew. So
they already knew.
But they didn't have concrete evidence. Yeah. But with the new DNA technology, just early, like I said earlier this month, they were finally able to confirm it was in fact him.
Do you think that helped? Or that brought back old pain?
Good question. I could see both. I could see it's like, okay, 100% he did it. He's gone. We're done. But, you know, they already accepted that when he confessed it. So mm-hmm. they kind of put that away. And I'm sure it was like ripping a Band-Aid off. And mm-hmm. actually, yeah, like ripping a Band-Aid off. So he confessed. So they put that Band-Aid on that wound. Like, we know we're pretty sure he did it. He has been executed. We can go on. But then, 51 years later, they have that 100% confirmation. Rip that Band-Aid off, but then let it air out. Let it heal fully, 100%. Mm-hmm. They can take those next steps that they need to. It's not lingering over their head.
I like that analogy.
Yeah. Well, on November 8th, 1974, 18-year-old Carol DeRanche was shopping at the mall when Bundy identified himself as a police officer named Officer Rosalind.
Officer Doofy reporting for duty.
So what he did is he watched her leave her car, stalked her in the mall. He took down her license plate while he was outside, and then he approached her and was like, "Hey, somebody broke into your car. You need to come with me and go check it out." And she was like, "Oh my gosh, okay. Well, especially back then, you're not thinking some rando is going to come and be like, 'Hey, somebody broke in your car. I'm going to kill you.'"
The fact that he comes up with these scenarios is insane.
Yeah. So she follows him to her car, and he's like, "Anything look like it's missing?" And she was like, "No, nothing's out of place." And so then her red flags start going off. She's like, "Okay, something's up." She's like, "I need to see your identification." This monster pulls out a fake badge and shows it to her. Mm-hmm. And it looked legit. So she's like, "Oh, he is a police officer." He's like, "Yeah, like we've got him at the jail. You need to come with me so we can press charges."
Like even now you can buy fake badges.
Yeah, which is terrifying.
Yeah, it's scary.
So she's like, "Okay, yeah, let's go." So she starts walking with him to his car, and she sees that he's in a Volkswagen.
His cruiser bug.
And she's like, "What the hell?" And she's like, "Well, I don't know if he told her or if she just kind of thought on her own he's undercover. He's working undercover at the mall. Of course he's not going to have a police car sitting there because that's going to draw attention.
Now, hang on a second. This motherfucker's wearing a police uniform, you just said. But he's not in a cruiser?
I don't know.
Because he's undercover?
I can't question them. This was in the 70s. Who freaking knows? And I don't know if he was in a police uniform. He just approached her and said, I am the police.
Okay. I misunderstood you. I thought you said he was wearing a uniform.
He said, I am the police.
Okay.
So he could have been in normal clothes.
Could have just been in normal clothes. That would make sense. But then again, why wouldn't you ask for information then?
Yeah. Well, you're probably panicking. Oh my gosh, somebody just broke into my car. What's missing? And you just kind of... We have the jaded point of view now. Back in the 70s, it was all hippie and love.
I suppose you're right. Yeah.
So,
call me dumb.
Okay, dumb. No, I'm just kidding. So she decides he's undercover, gets in the Volkswagen with him. They start driving.
Without a seat?
No, he had a seat in it this time.
Okay.
He put the seat back.
Oh, well, he learned from his mistakes.
I guess so. Okay. I guess so. He's evolving. So they start driving, but he doesn't start driving towards the police station. So she's like, where are you taking me? And he basically pulls over and says, if you make a freaking sound, I will blow your head off. Like, I will kill you. And so, of course, she starts panicking. A struggle ensues. He has handcuffs that he pulls out of nowhere. And during the struggle, he's handcuffing her. He thinks he gets them latched. The dumbass put both handcuffs on one wrist in the struggle. So she throws the car door open, hauls ass down the road. He starts chasing her with a crowbar, mind you. She sees a car, runs to the car. She's screaming, let me in, let me in. We get out of here. We got to go. We got to go. She gets in the car. She's like, hey, he just tried kidnapping me. Take me to the police station. So they end up taking her to the police station where she can report it. But he's already gone by the time they get back.
Yeah.
So narrowly escapes Bundy.
But now they have a key witness.
Now they have a witness. So after that, just a few hours later, literally hours later, he failed at that one. 19 miles away, Bundy would strike again. So this time he goes into a school gymnasium and there's like a play going on. And he approaches several people in there trying to get them to go out to the car and they won't do it. Well, Debbie Kent, she was a high schooler. She was walking to her car in the parking lot when Bundy approached her. When police searched the scene, they found a key that went to the handcuffs that were used on Carol just a few hours earlier.
Hmm.
So Debbie Kent is missing. They cannot find her, but they were able to find a key to handcuffs that went to Carol's. Liz would see all the murders in Utah and decided to call the police yet again to make another report. This time, they would listen, but with no actual evidence linking Ted to the murders and the eyewitness account saying it was not the man they seen that day at the lake, there was not really anything the police could do. Like, she's saying it's him, but all these witnesses, we showed them a picture of this guy, and they're like, no, that's not him.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of like, what do we do? And they have no evidence showing that it's him, other than this woman calling saying it's him. In December, Liz would make another report. And that January, Ted would come to Seattle to stay with Liz for a week. So again, it just goes back to, I could not imagine being in her shoes with her thinking this, reporting it that many times. And then he's like, oh, I'm going to come stay the week with you.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Yep.
About 9 months later, in 1975, Bundy would move to Colorado, and then women began going missing there. So Washington, it stopped. He moves to Colorado, and what do you know? All of a sudden, women are going missing in Colorado. Mm-hmm.
And at this point, they haven't really put anything together with him yet.
No.
So they're not even, like, following his moves or any of this stuff. So
at this point, they're starting to kind of look at him, but they also have 100 other people they're trying to look at too, because they had that list. So they're not, I mean, they're watching, but not really watching, if that makes sense.
Sure, yeah.
Just now starting to kind of put the dots together. Well, Karen Eileen Campbell was a 23-year-old registered nurse that was engaged to cardiologist Ray Godowski. They met through work. Ray was a divorced dad of two, and even though there was a 9-year age gap, between the two, the couple seemed, on all accounts, very happy. Karen got along great with his children, and she had been living with him for about a year at this point. The family would travel to the Wildwood Inn in Snowmass Village, Colorado, for a medical conference and decided to make it a little family vacay. So it's like a work/family vacation. Karen wasn't feeling well, but wanted to enjoy the time with her family, so she went anyways. And we talked about this yesterday, you know, what if she didn't go? What if she felt so bad she didn't go? Would she still be here? I mean, he probably would have got somebody else, but just those little small decisions that completely changed the trajectory of your life.
Yep.
On January 12th, 1975, the family went to dinner, and then they met with others because they were planning on going skiing later on. Everyone else had ate, they had a few drinks, but Karen still wasn't feeling 100%, so she skipped the drinks and she just ate like a beef stew or something just to kind of hold her stomach over. After dinner, the group walked to Walgreens and they were looking at magazines. One of their friends had actually brought a Playboy magazine on the trip, and Karen was kind of teasing him about it and was like, I've got a much better magazine that would be a way better read than that. And he kind of laughed, was like, okay, we'll swap magazines when we get back. She's like, all right, deal. So they go back to the lodge, and about 8:30, they're all sitting around a fire, just kind of hanging out. And that friend was like, hey, don't forget, we're going to swap magazines. She's like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and go get it real quick. So Karen gets up. She tells Ray, hey, I'm running up to the room to go grab this magazine. I'll be right back. Well, time goes on, and her fiance is like, she hasn't come back yet. I should probably go check on her because I know she wasn't feeling that great. So he goes up to the room, but Karen took the only key to the hotel room, so he couldn't get in. So he was knocking on the door. She wasn't answering. He's like, great. She was not feeling well. She's not answering the door. He was worried. So he went downstairs, told the front desk what was going on. They gave him a key. He went back upstairs. Karen's nowhere to be found. And that magazine was still sitting on the bedside table.
Wow.
Never even made it to the room. So from the lodge in the hotel, going up the elevator, I think they're on like the third floor or something like that, she goes missing.
Wow.
And that happens time and time again. All these people are so close to the safety of their own homes, and he takes them. So, of course, they're searching the entire lodge. They're checking backgrounds on employees. They're looking everywhere. Can't find anything. They search rooms, elevator shafts, crawl spaces, parking lots, nothing. Temperatures did drop down to -2 that night, and even with the bad weather, the police did start kind of searching like the immediate area for her. Ray would stay for a week after she disappeared, hoping to find Karen, but eventually had to return home without his fiance. Karen's body would be found about a month later on February 17th. It is believed that Bundy parked his bug in a deserted parking lot and then somehow convinced Karen to go with him. He would then drive 3.1 miles away to Owl Creek Road, and an employee that was actually passing through when her body was found seen like birds of prey flying around, mm-hmm. and was like, I better go check that out. So he did, and he is the one that came across her body. There were obvious signs of animals that had scavenged her body, making immediate identification impossible. She had been badly beaten, and the back of her skull had 3 heavy fractures. She also had deep cut wounds, including a slit to her left earlobe, and her hyoid bone had been cracked, and there was evidence that she had been raped.
Mm-hmm.
Her remains were sent to Denver General Hospital, where Dr. Donald Clark performed an autopsy, and a positive ID was officially made through dental records. They ended up having to thaw her body out for over 24 hours, and after that, they were able to determine that her cause of death was blows to the back of her head with a blunt object. She had a cracked tooth and ligature marks around her wrist. Based on the contents of her stomach, she died 2 to 5 hours after disappearing.
Wow.
At this time, police in Colorado had no idea about the other murders that had been taking place in Utah and Washington. So again, they had no way to communicate that.
Yeah, this was back before the internet or any of that stuff. So they had no way to communicate other than by phone.
Yeah.
Did they even have fax back then?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I don't know that they did. I don't know when that
came around.
I don't either.
Well, on March 12th, just 2 months later, Julie Cunningham, a 23-year-old part-time ski instructor, just got back from a two-week trip from Idaho. She called her mom, told her about the trip, and then decided to head to the bar to meet some friends and a roommate. The bar was right down the road from her apartment. Julie never made it to the bar to meet her friends and roommate. So her roommate ends up coming back home later that night, fully expecting her to be there. She wasn't. Kind of waited around a little bit. She never showed up, so her roommate would end up reporting her missing. They searched the apartment, did not find anything out of place. All of her belongings were still there. Bundy would confess to approaching Julie while he was on crutches and asked for help carrying his boots to the car. She agreed, and he would hit her over the head and handcuffed her. Bundy would then drive to a remote area about 80 miles west of Vail near Rifle, Colorado, to an area with large trees and a circle drive, according to him. He would then rape and strangle Julie to death, and weeks later, he would drive 6 hours from his apartment back to where he left her remains to revisit her body. Julie was never found.
Wow.
Bundy would also confess that he enjoyed revisiting the bodies of his victims because he could exert total control and possession over them. It prolonged his power over them and satisfied his compulsion for possession, and he was able to relive the murders, often staying with the remains overnight.
Overnight?
Yep.
What the f... Ah.
On April 6th, 1975, Denise Oliverson left her house on her bike, headed to her parents' house after an argument with her husband, but never made it there. She was reported missing. The next day, her yellow bike and shoes would be found under a bridge nearby. Her family had put up missing posters using her wedding photo, and days before Bundy's execution, he confessed to disposing of a body in a river near Grand Junction. It is believed to have been Denise. Bundy confessed to about 30 homicides between 1974 and 1978, but the actual number is unknown and believed to be much higher. Some estimate around 100.
Wow.
Then, on May 6th, 1975, 12-year-old Lynette Culver would disappear from Pocatello, Idaho. She was the youngest of three children, close with her family, and she was known to be a bit shy until she got to know you, but was considered a really good kid. Her only downfall is she occasionally would skip school. She had brown hair, hazel eyes. She was in the seventh grade at Alameda Junior High. She kept good grades, was very social. Lynette left school that day during her lunch break. She didn't mention having any plans on skipping out at lunch to anyone, but it was pretty normal for her to do. No one knows where she went that afternoon, but there was one sighting of her getting on a bus to head to Fort Hall just 10 minutes away. She was last seen wearing a burgundy jacket with a fur hood, red checkered shirt, and a pair of jeans. She was initially thought to be a runaway. There were some reports that Lynette was last seen at a local Indian reservation, but these reports were never confirmed. There were other reports saying, oh, she ran away. But when they would look into it, like, there was nothing supporting that. It was just random people, again, calling, trying to insert themselves into the investigation. The family kept hoping that she would be found and knew that she would not stay away from home that long by choice. Anytime that there were reports of sightings, her father would go himself to check it out. Bundy would confess to her murder in 1989. He said he didn't know her name, but knew that her family had recently moved, which was true, and said that he picked up Lynette and drove her to a Holiday Inn. He would then go on to say that he raped her, drowned her in the bathtub, and then disposed of her body in Snake River. This case would never be confirmed, and authorities question if he was actually the one who abducted her. So there were actually four other cases in the late 1970s and early 1980s where other girls were abducted, four other girls, and killed in the Pocatello area. during these other abductions, Bundy was in jail, so it couldn't have been him. Which I don't know what's scarier. Bundy did it or didn't do it and lied about it, so there's a whole nother freaking psychopath running around, or...
Yeah, that's scary.
They wonder if he maybe heard of the case and wanted to take credit for it, but it is unsure. Her body still has not been discovered, even after extensive search efforts. And just to point out here, Bundy was 28 years old at that point when he took this 12-year-old child and did that. A literal child, 12 years old.
What a sick son of a bitch.
By the time authorities began connecting the dots, Bundy had already left a trail of devastation across multiple states, but he was only getting started. So, while Bundy is out here committing these heinous murders on women and literal children, he's keeping up with that good guy image. And so he would invite all of his buddies from Washington over in May of 1975. They had cookouts. They went and ran the town. Like, he's kind of showboating, like, look how successful I am here, and kind of showing off. One of the co-workers was named Carol Boone, and she will come into play later on in the story. So remember her name. That June, Bundy would visit his longtime girlfriend, Liz, in Washington. And even though Liz had her suspicions that Bundy could be involved in the recent disappearance, she couldn't make herself actually believe that this man was who she built a life with. Like, she's like, there's no way they're the same person.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine.
So Bundy would start talking about marriage with her, and they ended up deciding on Christmas, which is she delaying it, hoping he gets caught before then? Like, yeah, I'll marry you, but let's wait. Let's just take a beat and let's wait a minute, you know, mm-hmm. and kind of waiting it out and just keep him happy so that he doesn't attack her. I don't know. But what's crazy is even though he's talking about marriage with her, Bundy was also seeing Carol Boone, who came to visit. And he had a classmate over there that he was also seeing. A few short weeks later, after Bundy visited Liz, Susan Curtis would become Bundy's next victim. This story is wild. This poor girl experienced so much trauma and heartache before she even crossed paths with Bundy.
Yeah.
Susan, also known as Sue, was an honor student, very athletic. She played baseball, volleyball, track, basketball. Like, if it was a sport, she was doing it. She was 15 years old and going into her sophomore year at Woods Cross High School. She had run away from home a few times due to a rough home life. It didn't really go into detail about what her rough home life was, but it seemed to be kind of rough. She did have a history of mental health concerns after attempting suicide on a few different occasions. She was also the victim of sexual assault at the hands of a former PE teacher that was later convicted for his crimes.
Wow.
She had ran away with this PE teacher before. The two actually flew to Phoenix and were staying in a hotel room, but Sue had a pregnancy scare and she ended up going to a clinic to take a test. Well, while she was there, she didn't want to give them her name because then they could be found. So she gave them, like, a friend's name from back home. And with her doing that, there was a mix-up in the paperwork. And so when they sent the results, they sent it to that old friend's house. And they were able to track them down by using that.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that stuff did happen back then. You just didn't hear about it like you do now.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
He was eventually court-ordered to stay away from Sue, who was 14 at the time. The teacher was initially charged with rape, but pleaded guilty for a lesser charge of unlawful sexual intercourse, which is the same damn thing, just a different label. Thing.
Yeah. Why change it?
This was very traumatic for Sue, and it led to a lot of behavioral issues later. That summer that she went missing, there was a lot of turmoil between her and her family, and so she began staying at a friend's house quite a bit.
I wonder when that actually became a law, like the the rape and the misconduct and stuff. Because, like, literally 20 years before that, Jerry Lee Lewis married a 14-year-old.
Yeah, I don't know when the laws came about.
So I have no idea.
Wild.
That's really wild. Because if it was just that amount of time between then and there, in my mind.
And for this girl to suffer that much before even crossing paths with Ted Bundy is just heart-wrenching.
It really is. It really is.
Well, her parents and her sister would pick her up from that friend's house to bring her home. They were working on their relationship, trying to make things better. Sue had also registered for a 2-day Latter-day Saints conference at Brigham Young University with her sister and, like, some of the friends. On June 26th, the two sisters rode their bikes with friends 50 miles to this conference.
It's a long-ass bike ride.
Could you imagine telling May, go get on a bike with your buddies and travel 50 miles down the road?
They would never do it.
No. But could you imagine being okay with that?
Not for them, but when I was a kid, yeah.
I'm not talking about when you were a kid. I'm talking about our children right now. 14-year-old no, little girl.
No, it never happened.
Insane.
That's insane. That'd be like just letting her... 50 miles would be like from here... Shit. From here...
Canton?
Yeah. Yeah, roughly.
Insane. No way. Well, they met up with others attending the conference along the way. They even camped out overnight in, like, whoever's yard that they could find, basically. They finally made it to their destination and got settled into their dorms for the few days that they were going to be there. There was a formal banquet early on the first day of the conference. Susan was last seen wearing a full-length yellow evening gown. She had just finished dinner and wanted to check her braces to make sure she didn't have any food stuck in them, because she had just gotten her braces like a month before this. Mm-hmm. She told her sister that she's going to walk to the dorm. It was only about like a quarter of a mile down the road. I mean, she just rode 50 on her bike.
Right.
She's going to walk a quarter mile down the road to the dorm. She's going to brush her teeth and be right back. So her sister realized that Sue had never made it back. And so she's like, I better go check on her. So she went to go check on her, and she wasn't in the dorm. All of her belongings were still there. Her toothbrush was still there and dry. So they believe that she never made it back to the dorm. But because she had ran away before, the story really didn't stir up much media at all. The little bit of media there was, it just didn't. She's a runaway. She's doing it again. This murder would be Bundy's last confession, happening just moments before his execution. He said that he buried her body near Price, Utah. Police searched the area, but they were never able to locate her remains.
Wow.
And that's where we're going to end part two.
This story is so fucked up, Audrey.
I know. And then it's bad enough that he is attacking these college women, but now he's preying on 12-year-old little girls.
Yeah.
14-year-old little girls. 12-year-old.
And that's just what we know about.
Yeah, that's just what he confessed to. They really do believe that he started much earlier than what they have noted, just because of how he attacked. He had to have started messy and just didn't get caught.
Mm-hmm.
And worked his way up to what he was. They just don't know who it is.
Yeah, because you'd have to be that calculated would have to take practice.
Yeah.
It would have to.
Yeah.
Yep. That's a frightening thought.
Terrifying. And then meanwhile, he's acting like good old boy Ted with all of his friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's cool. Terrifying.
Wow.
Well, we have one more part to do, and we will be able to wipe our hands of Ted Bundy.
I'm ready.
This was a dark one. Next week is very dark. A lot of details. But we will get to talk about his execution, the trial. The trial was insane. And all the stuff in between.
Awesome.
And then the week following, we're going to do like a little year celebration. We're going to try to get Seth and Tori on. We'll see how it goes. Looking at you. But if not, Josh and I'll put something together. Send us your favorite episodes that you guys had this year. Maybe we can like pull some clips or something and kind of play little bits.
Yeah.
I have a couple in mind that I really enjoyed. What you want to hear in the future, what you want to hear now, what you're liking, what you're not liking. Give us all the deets, man.
Yeah. And do your thing. Like, follow, share, subscribe.
All the things.
All those things.
Just helps. Gets us up into the podcast universe. Go check out Remember That. We had a really cool... I forgot we didn't mention that this time.
No, we didn't.
That's what happens when you record too many times. Yeah. So we had a really cool interview with Remember That. We got to interview Terry McMinn, the OG Texas Chainsaw Massacre Pam.
Yep. The hook lady.
The famous hook scene. Such a cool experience. Such a cool lady. She had a lot of cool stories.
Yeah, she was awesome. Thank you so much for that interview.
Yeah, that was awesome. So go check out Remember That. Go check out that interview. You won't regret it. We've got some cool stuff going on with them. And I guess we're going to call it good for now because in 30 minutes, we're going to be recording with Corky for the Paranormal War Room.
Yep.
So tune in next week. Where the guilty confess.
And the ghostly never rest.
Bye, guys.
Later, y'all.